in the stage and the joyful stage. There have been schools of thought who have asserted that it's enough not to have pain. But human beings are never satisfied by merely lack of pain. As long as you are hungry, it is natural that you feel, if I get any food, that is sufficient. But as soon as you are able to have two square meals a day, you want different dishes, different sweets, because they give you not just a painless state, but a joyful state. So all human beings, and as a matter of fact, all beings, like to have joyful state in which there will be no pain. Because as Acharya Shankara points out, as far as search of joy is concerned, getting away from pain is concerned, everyone, all the animal, the bird and the fish kingdoms that we know of, are committed to it. He says, Pashubhishcha Avisheshat. He gives an apt illustration. If you take green grass towards a cow, it will come towards you. And if you try to beat it with a stick, it will run away from you. So whether it is an animal or whether it is a human being, all conscious beings are continuously in search of a joyful state. But then, we make a distinction between the joyful state which is proper and the joyful state which may or may not be proper. In Sanskrit there are two words, Preyas and Shreyas. That which is pleasing and that which is good. At times pleasing and good may be the same thing, but often they are not. All the Indian thinkers, whether they belong to the Vedic tradition, to the Adamic tradition, to the Buddhistic tradition, to the Jaina tradition, even the so-called atheists, that is Charvakas, agreed on this point, that everyone is in search of joy. But most of us stay at a level where our joys are instinctive. That is the unreflective state. We become conscious of a thing. We think it is desirable. We desire it. We work to possess it. We possess it. It gives us joy. The unreflective mind is satisfied. But a reflective mind goes a step further. I got it. That is very true. It gave me joy. That is very true. But is joy in the nature of the object or it is of the nature of subject? Now that is where the analysis starts. Preyas and Shreyas, the pleasing and good. Good is that which is going to give us joy forever and ever. present is only momentary. So reflective mind feels that the same object which gives me joy does not give joy to others. And even to me, it need not give joy all the time. As long as I am hungry, I feel I will have a good meal. But once my stomach is full, the very same things, if I am compelled to eat, they will be the cause of pain. As most of us know, whenever we go to a party, after we had a fill, somebody from that house will come and say, "You must take such and such thing at least from my hands." Now you don't want to refuse him. You eat it. But at the same time, you are not happy about it. You are not liking it. You are doing it to please him, not to please yourself. So the same object does not give joy even to the same person, and definitely not to the different people. There are people who like to eat bitter things. In Bengal, there are certain dishes. Whenever I go to Calcutta, they prepare those dishes. I enjoy them, but they are bitter dishes. Suppa, they call it. Those who are with me, generally I tell them, don't take it. But they feel that they should try. If I enjoy it so much, it must be tasty. So when they eat it and they find it bitter, they wonder, how do I like it? Or how do the Bengalis like it? You go to Gujarat, in your pulse, in your vegetables, in everything they are going to put sugar. So no matter which dish you take, you are bound to taste sweetness. Now you don't like it. Similarly, perhaps in the northern provinces, we take lot of chilies, which a Gujarati will not be able to stand. Different people have different tastes, and those particular things give them joy. It's not necessary that they give joy to all. And the same person also, as I pointed out, under different conditions, enjoy a thing or do not enjoy a thing. So the reflective mind says, if the joy existed in the object, just as color exists in paper. Paper is white. Color is existing there. So it will be white to everyone. Whoever has eyes and sees it is going to see it as white. If taste existed similarly in an object, it will be the same to everyone. So sugar is sweet to every one of us. Bitter taste will taste bitter to all of us. But we may not like it and therefore enjoy it. That is going to be the difference. What is this liking? How does it come about? Well, the psychologists analyze and find that from our childhood, we are conditioned to certain types of food. Generally, whatever my family takes as good food, I also take as good food. And I am conditioned by those thoughts. Of course, there are even the social pressures working on what is good and what is not good. But it is something external to us which is imposed upon us, and under its influence we are able to see it as something which is giving us joy and something which is not giving us joy. But what is the common factor? The objects change in all different experiences of joy, but I remain the same. So the enjoyment cannot be in the object. It has to be in the subject. Everything when it is connected with me is able to give me pleasure or pain. Depending on what I value and what I disvalue. It is true that most of us are conditioned, but still that conditioning has come into being because we have exposed ourselves to those conditioning willingly, and there we do not will it. I know many families, at least for 10 generations or more, they never tasted liquor, they never tasted meat. The parents even today don't even think of eating these things. And if under certain circumstances, by mistake they feel they had taken, they will vomit it out automatically, even without willing it. But the children of the same people are quite at home with both. They can eat any meat, I need not mention the names. They can drink themselves and be full. Why? If it was merely conditioning, this thing could not have come. So the individual freedom remains. What he wants to will, he wills. Conditioning does make a difference. We are not denying that. But the freedom of will is supreme. So, whatever we say is good to me, appears good to me, is what I have valued. I have given the value to that particular object, and therefore it is pleasing to me. The technical words which we use in Sanskrit is shobhana adhyas. Adhyas means superimposition. We superimpose that such and such thing is good for me, or such and such thing is not good for me, that value judgment is given to it. The unreflective thought also does it, but without thinking. And therefore, he is basically conditioned by his conscious and unconscious mind. Though he has the free will, he doesn't exercise it. Often enough, things which are quite painful to our body, if they are in fashion, we go for them. Very tight clothes in a warm country cannot be of any joy as far as the body is concerned. Why do we wear them? Because everyone else, what they say, the in thing is to wear it. I am pointing it out that most people are controlled in superimposing the idea of pleasing or non-pleasing according to the social circumstances that they are in. The reflective mind says, well, if things are pleasing or non-pleasing depending on my will, I must exercise it in a particular way. Why should I be slave to my conditionings or to my social norms? Why should I question what is really good for me? So the reflective mind says, a thing, even though it is pleasing, if harms anyone else or harms me at a different period, at a different time, then I must renounce it. Now that is where the will comes in. The doctor says, don't take sugar. But we can't stay without sugar. The doctor says, don't take salt, but we can't stay without salt. Why? Because our power of will is weak. So why not exercise my free will as I like it? That is the reflective mind. But what is it where I should exercise my free will? Scriptures are very clear. They enunciate a simple thumb rule. You do a thing which you feel should be done by everyone else. So for example, many times I tell people, when they complain that our servants make money when they go to buy vegetables or sweets, they take commission or whatever it is, I ask them, do you give your full tax returns? They say no. Aren't you cheating the government? Yes. If you are cheating the government, the servant has a right to cheat you. You should be happy about it. Even a thief is not happy when theft takes place in his own house. He goes to report to the police station. Now that is a strange phenomenon. The person who will be talking ill of the government, ill of the police department, ill of everyone connected with such things will be the first one to go and report. That means he makes a distinction between what is pleasing to him and what he feels should be. I am pointing this out because generally a question arises in modern times. How are we going to know what is right and what is wrong? When we study different cultures, different nations, different religions, we find that which ought to be done differs in different religions. It is not the same. In a particular society, a particular act is regarded as good. In another society, that very act is regarded as something bad. Now, how are we to find out what is good and bad? One conclusion is, say there is nothing which is good and there is nothing which is bad. But the question remains, do you have the sense of oughtness or not? Every human being is endowed with a sense of oughtness. There are certain things which when you do, you feel you have done the correct thing. Other things you do, you may not be able to resist the temptation, but you do know that it is wrong. There may be differences of opinion about what is right and what is wrong, but the sense of oughtness, sense of rightness and wrongness is there in all human beings. So the scriptures say that under any given circumstances, Atmana Pratikulani Paresham na Samachari. Whatever you think is undesirable for you, you must not do to others. The scriptures are very particular about their words. They do not say that do with others as you do. It says do not do to others what you would not do to yourself. Because when it is a question of what suits me, the things may vary. Because there are occasions when we try to make rules and regulations which may fit a person and which may not fit a person. There is a famous incident in Buddha's life. He found that his disciples were collecting lot of things and they were having horses, donkeys to carry all their bags and baggages. So Buddha decided that I must control their desires. So one day he called all the members and told them, from now on, no one is going to carry anything which he cannot carry on his own head or back. Your personal luggage should not be more than what you can personally carry. After a few years, he found that luggage was still increasing. Only the power, the capabilities of those people carrying their bags and baggages was increasing. He was a great experimenter. It was in the midwinter. He slept outside the house, under no shade. He used one blanket. About 12 o'clock in the midnight, he felt cold. He used two blankets. At about 2 o'clock, he felt still cold, so he used the third blanket. And then it was time to get up. So he called all his disciples and said, from now on, no one will have more than 3 blankets. That should suffice. Well, it is a way of doing things. But for some, even 3 may be too much. And for some, 3 may be too little too. So, no matter how you are going to say what is good or what is bad, eventually, you cannot say that 3 blankets are good for everyone. You can say that what is not desirable for me, that means possessions, if they are not desirable for me, are not desirable for others. So we have to distinguish between two things. One is the sense of oughtness, which all of us possess, and the difference in the objects of oughtness. They may differ and they need a reflective mind. The third stage comes when after reflection a person has found out that actually it is he who is giving the values. So in the third stage he discriminates. He tries to find out how I can control my will, to what extent I can control my will, and is will free to attain happiness without any objects whatsoever. This is the third stage in which Maitreyi was. Saho vacha Maitreyi, yanyo mayam bhagoho sarva prithvi vittena purana syat katham tena amrita syamiti. Maitreyi said, you are giving me wealth. This is meager wealth. But supposing you could give me the whole earth, full of wealth, sarva prithvi vittena purna, the whole earth full of wealth, பிசிஆர் ஏர்போர்ட் பூமி இவன் தட் இலங்கை ஏர்போர்ட் ஹோட்டல் தி இம்மார்டல் தி பிளேஸ் விச் வில் நெவர் எண்ட்.